Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
The Liar, how a double agent in the CIA became the Cold War's last honest man. This is a fascinating tale. In the 70s, the CIA and KGB were both watching, and I hope I get his name right, Karol Kircher closely, and they were both convinced he was working for the enemy. They were both right. It is the subject of a fascinating new book by Benjamin Cunningham. Delighted to be joining me live on the line, Benjamin himself. Benjamin, good morning to you.
Good morning. Very happy to be here this morning.
Pleasure's all mine. It's a fascinating tale, and it really is. It's the 70s. It's the height of the Cold War, the Berlin Wall. You know, the Iron Curtain has been down for decades now. There is, you know, a real sense of mistrust between the two of them. Explain a little bit about who Kircher was then, please.
Yeah. So the backbone of the story is that Karol and his wife Hanna were Czechoslovaks. It was still, of course, Czechoslovakia at the time. They moved to the States in 1965. Karol is working for the STB, which is the Czechoslovak version of the KGB. Their job is basically to move to the U.S. as sleeper agents. They successfully pose as refugees, fleeing communist oppression, move to the States. In 1973, Karol actually gets a job inside the CIA, passes a lie detector test to get the job, is working for the CIA inside CIA headquarters for a few years and then outside as a consultant for a number of years after, but feeding internal CIA information back to the Eastern Bloc. And that's kind of the core of the story. There's a lot of intrigue surrounding all of that,
Yeah, I mean, it seems quite incredible, doesn't it? Because this is the height of the Cold War, you know. I mean, America's just coming out of the Vietnam War. There's a huge paranoia about the arms race. The Soviet Union is lumbering on in its sort of monolithic way of dealing with the world. So, you know, we're thinking now, of the Czech Republic or Slovakia. But at the point in time, you know, Czechoslovakia was not an enlightened European nation. It was one of the Warsaw Pact countries. It seems incredible that a Czech national could actually get into the CIA.
Yeah. So his sort of, I don't want to call it genius, that's too strong, his trick was he was able to sort of convince people that he was this sort of, you know, democratic freedom fighter that was being oppressed, right? And there were plenty of legitimate refugees that were fleeing these places that really were willing to, you know, join up with the West and sort of, be sort of cold warriors for the quote unquote, you know, Western side. And so Karol basically was successful in convincing people he was legitimately one of these sort of, you know, dissidents, aggrieved dissidents and, you know, pro-democracy type figures. Mm. And so I guess, you know, the real twist here is that he was able to do it for quite a long time as well. They moved to the States in 1965. They were eventually caught in 1984. So we're talking about nearly two decades of sort of fooling everybody, including friends and neighbors and, you know, employers and everything. Yeah.
I mean, how did he? I mean, what sort of stuff was he sending back then to the Czech Republic, to Czechoslovakia at the time?
Yes. So, there's one incident where he sent back the design of a new American naval ship, like a state-of-the-art naval ship. That's one incident. Probably the most high-profile sort of thing that he was involved in for a long time, for a longer period. His first job at the CIA was the CIA had bugged Soviet embassies in Latin America. And they were recording conversations on the phone and also inside the embassies. Carl would take these recordings. He spoke Russian along with German, Czech, and English and French. So these are the kind of people that are capable of doing these sorts of things. He would listen to the tapes, flag them when there was something interesting for the CIA. And the CIA was trying to use these to recruit Soviet diplomats, basically. And what Carl would do would be to tip off the Eastern Bloc over who the CIA was trying to recruit to flip sides, if that makes sense. There's a lot of flipping going back and forth.
Yeah.
I hope that's clear.
And of course, at this time, we're talking sort of mid. Well, let's talk early 70s in the States. They've just had the situation in Vietnam. They're now paranoid that Latin America is going to go the same way. So they are absolutely on the case in terms of Central American, Salvador, Guatemala, etc., and the South American nations.
That's correct. Yeah. So there's a lot of the history is quite dark. Starting in the 70s, and even so, 1973, famously, there was a coup in Chile where Pinochet took charge. That was sort of American, at least American supported, if not quite.
Yeah, I put that in parentheses if I were you, Benjamin. But yes.
Yes. So there's a lot of sort of dark sort of collaboration between military dictatorships in Latin America and the CIA in sort of formal and informal. He's kind of, you know, caught up in that machine for a good part of the 70s.
And is the CIA in some sort of disarray, if you like, or some sort of, I was going to say soul searching, perhaps not that that's not the word you use with the agency, but
they, I don't know if they have a soul, but yes.
Yeah, it's, well, no, but you know, they've had to beat an ignominious retreat from Southeast Asia. Yeah.
Right.
You've had the Nixon years, so, you know, 73, yep. Watergate happens. And you know, it seems that to many, you know, you've had the anti-war demonstrations, the FBI and the CIA are running around looking for enemies within. So perhaps, you know, in football parlance, they've taken their eye off the ball and allowed him to come in on this situation. And he can thrive like that.
I think that's true. The 70s in particular, mid-70s and into the late mid-70s, Congress, for example, is actually holds some pretty major hearings, unpacking what the CIA has been up to. Actually, there's the Church Committee was a famous Senate committee that sort of brought light to a lot of the dirty tricks that had been underway for the previous two plus decades. So the CIA is in a chaotic situation. They had even, you know, their bounds that are not, you know, very restrictive to begin with. They've overstepped their mandate. It's recognized they've overstepped their mandate by, you know, people in power in Washington. So there's domestic political turmoil with the Nixon Watergate sort of things. There's turmoil at the CIA. The Cold War is at an interesting sort of kind of stasis point where things are not sort of, you know, as intense as they were in the 50s, nor as intense as they become when Reagan gets into power and kind of pours some gasoline on the fire. So it's a kind of an interesting sort of gray zone where he's kind of, you know, weaving through. And I think that's kind of one of the things that really, you know, drew me to the story. It's sort of this era of the Cold War that's a little bit murkier than most of the periods that jump to mind, at least to my mind when I think of the Cold War.
Yeah, in the 50s, it's very clear cut, like the buzz cut hairstyles of the hawks in the Truman administration, isn't it? Basically, one of the other things that makes this interesting. And I'm not going to get all salacious on you here, Benjamin, but it's the 70s. It's New York. I mean, I'm going to drop in a Studio 54 reference here. But shall we say they fling themselves into the permissive lifestyle with great gusto?
They did. They did. They kind of they lived on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. So later, Carl accumulates some money and his wife, Hannah, is actually a diamond dealer in the Manhattan Diamond District.
And she was quite a quiet girl to start off with, wasn't she? That this is the transformation that, you know, come to America and start a new life. But blimey, O'Reilly, Benjamin.
That's correct. Kind of a conservative, country girl from Czechoslovakia that sort of, really jumped into the deep end when she got to the States. So they get into spouse swapping sort of parties, which, I guess was more common in the 70s.
It was the 70s. Car keys were going everywhere.
That's right. And so nightlife, there's, cocaine is kind of flowing around in the upper echelons of Manhattan society. So they kind of that's their social group. So that also adds some sort of sizzle to the story and intrigue.
What was you mentioned that Reagan comes in the 80s and, as you put it so eloquently, puts gasoline on most of the foreign policy. What was their sort of undoing then? But did they become too overconfident? Was there a diamond deal, a wife swap too far? What was the thing that brought them down?
Yeah, it's an interesting twist, actually. So it's fairly complicated, but basically in the late 70s, Carl sort of, for a few years, isn't really spying. He kind of has a falling out on both sides, and he's kind of cast adrift a bit. And in the early 80s, though, Reagan comes in, and the Eastern Bloc, Moscow specifically, is, paranoid and frightened by the rhetoric that's coming out of Washington. And basically, they kind of look to revive everybody that has ever spied for them before. And so another agent comes, a Czechoslovak agent, comes and approaches Carl in 1982. So he's been kind of on the fringes for a couple of years and basically asks him to get back in the game. And he agrees to. The guy who contacts Carl, his name was Jan Fila, however, was actually had flipped and was working for the CIA. So it was a case of, sort of the Cold War getting more heated and the Soviets being desperate for any information they could get. It was Carl who had been kind of cast out, and he's this sort of ambitious, egotistical guy and feels the pull to get back in, kind of like, I don't know, the old Western, the gunfighter who's got one more gunfight in it or whatever. And but he's actually kind of blinded to what the risks at that point. He's been in the kiln for so long. He's kind of desensitized to sort of, what's going on around him. And he does. He kind of is not careful enough in that later stage.
And it is a new political landscape, because you've got Carter's gone. Reagan's in charge. The Soviets have just gone into Afghanistan, and the fallout for that will continue for years. And that rumbles on with the death of Brezhnev, and then three very quick sort of Soviet Union lead. And that sows the seeds for the collapse, if you like, or the rise of Gorbachev. So the whole landscape is changing. And if you're on the Upper East Side, and going, having a lovely time, perhaps you are blinded to those new realities.
I think that's it. And I think it's also this case that he sort of, he's a guy that sort of never really felt anyone was on. He's a loner. He kind of always felt he was floating around and had to sort of play all sides against each other for his own survival. And so I think then, when you have these, you get these, I don't know, for lack of, a card you can play, or a chance to get a card you can play, you take it and you kind of think you can always balance one side off of another, because it had worked up to that point. He had managed to pull it off. So there's a confidence thing that is also a personality characteristic. No sane person kind of tries to do these things without, this heightened sense of self-confidence. And then when you basically succeed for a while, you're only sort of feeding that confidence, and you sort of start, yeah, as you say, maybe the big picture is not as clear to you because you're focused on your own sort of internal game. And yeah, the reality just gets distorted.
Was it a case of there was just one big slip and a knock on the door, and that was it, game over for them then, or?
Well, I would say that I don't want to give too much away, because it's an exciting sort of twist. But Carl started to work out quite a bit. He worked at the YMCA, like the sort of the local gym. And one of the guys he was working out with was an FBI agent. So it kind of goes from there.
You see, there's a village people joke in there somewhere. Why did you call it, the subtitle is the Cold War's Last Honest Man? That's a strange title for a double agent on the Upper East Side.
Yeah, well, we were trying to be witty, first of all, but second of all, I think what maybe, you know, the thing that, you know, in doing all this work, and I would just highlight, so a lot of the book actually comes from archive files. The STB's, you know, archives were declassified after communism collapsed. So I went through 30,000 pages of declassified Czechoslovak intelligence files. So there's stuff about, you know, there's psychological profiles of some of these characters. There's, you know, I'm actually able to reconstruct dinners at certain locations at certain times and things like that, that are real. There's the book opens with a conversation, an interrogation. That's a dialogue. And that's a real dialogue that really happened in real life in 1976. But, I'm sorry, I lost track of your question.
I mean, this is the thing, though.
The title,
Last Honest Man.
Yes. So as I was doing all this research, and I was talking to lots of people, talking to FBI agents who arrested Carl, I'm talking to former CIA agents that were sort of in the mix in this story. You know, what I found is how much, not necessarily intentionally, but how untruthful everybody is. So this myth that you have, you know, the bad guys lie and the good guys tell the truth and this sort of stuff, which is a simplification, but I think one that surrounds the Cold War. I think the Cold War is generally, you know, easily simplified into this good versus evil kind of thing. Everyone, in my estimation, was either a liar or telling half-truths or painting things with a pinkish hue or misremembering the past and things like that. And so that was one thing. Everyone felt like they were not telling the truth to some degree. The other thing was how much resources these spy agencies were spending spying on their own people. In other words, they would have spies spying on their own spies to make sure their spies weren't secretly working for the other side. So it just becomes this complete mess where truth and lying and things like this are almost indecipherable. And so I guess the attempt there in the subtitle is to be witty and say, actually, lying was, that is maybe the defining sort of characteristic of what happens in a Cold War, where you have this paranoia and hyper, you know.
Hypersensitivity to everything.
Yeah.
Isn't, you know, people spy on each other, half-truths, fudging the issues. I mean, how good it is to live in an era, Benjamin, where we don't have those on a day-to-day, where we don't have, you know, government agencies, you know, busting through the doors of a former president. You know, it's a real thing, isn't it, basically? I mean, when you come to do that, you must, because, okay, it's a different era, and some of us will hope those flares never come back into style, but, you know, there are, you know, you do get parallels with the agency because they, you know, like it or lump it, these agencies, you know, and the Bureau and whatever else are still operating. It hasn't been a clean sleep, and we will never know the dark machinations of what goes on inside our intelligence agencies.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's another thing is that when you go through the files and you see sort of the day-to-day bureaucracy of how something like this functions, a lot of it's total nonsense, right? It's just sort of coffee receipts or whatever, you know, like this. So it's like a giant just company, highly inefficient company. And so you kind of go through some of this stuff and you're like, how the hell does I can't believe that this is how things function, right? And so I think, you know, the more you wade into it and the more you see how much people are spying on each other to see if they're really spying on each other, it's not a good way to run the world. You know what I mean? Like, it's really kind of scary and also, like, systemically flawed. Like, I mean, you accept that that's kind of the way things are, as you say. It's naive to think this kind of stuff is still not going on, right? The beauty of this is that I'm able to sort of, because these files were declassified and things, and people were willing to speak because it happened a while ago, you're able to sort of paint the picture a little bit clearer, much more clearly than you could with a sort of contemporary thing. The details are sort of, you know, more readily available, but you kind of are discouraged in the end, right? You kind of are, you know, you kind of know this is how these things work, but when you sort of, you know, what is it? You know, you see how the sausage is made. It's not Yes. Not a pleasant sight, you know?
Indeed. This book is called The Liar, How a Double Agent in the CIA Became the Cold War's Last Honest Man. It's by Benjamin Cunningham, who we've been speaking to this morning. Benjamin, if people want to follow you online, is there a website? Do you do the social media thing? Or are you being monitored by both sides?
I'm sure by now there's plenty of people monitoring. So, yeah, my Twitter is @Cunning_tweets. And then my website, which is a little bit under reconstruction, but you can reach me there and find out all more about the book. It's bcunningham.org. So Benjamin Cunningham is my name, bcunningham.org.
Wonderful. And the book is also going to be available as a virtual download from our own virtual bookstore. The book is called Perfect. The Liar, How a Double Agent in the CIA Became the Cold War's Last Honest Man. I was thinking of a track to play, and it just took me back to Six Studio 54, so I think we'll play out with a bit of Bee Gees and Staying Alive. Benjamin All Cunningham, right. Thank you so much for your time today.
Really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.